Mics are coming up. We are resuming tonight's board meeting. We are on item five, which is leadership reports. And we'd like to begin this with a report from our superintendent.
Thank you. We're waiting while DJ brings that up. DJ, do you have the clicker? If not, I can have you advance them. That's okay. Yeah, why don't you just, you can just advance the slides for me, please. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Thank you. Let's go ahead to that first one. So, as you all know, we released the Generations Report in October of last year and have had conversations since then. That since has been translated into a strategic plan that you'll vote on later tonight. And it's a strategic plan that keeps learning at the center of our work, so I'm excited about that conversation later this evening and show you the work that we've been doing around that. I'm quite proud of it and proud of all the staff that has worked on it as well. So we'll hold the excitement for there, but I'm excited to have that conversation with you. So just some updates on things that I've been doing and things that have been happening the last couple of weeks. I had three school visits since the last board meeting, Woodrow Wilson Academy, also visited Green Mountain High School and toured the Academies program there, and then Matt Flores and Karen Kwanbeck and myself visited University Prep, which is a Denver school. They wanted us to come out and see some of their programs, so we went out and visited them today. I also had three principal finalist interviews with Maple Grove, Mickle John, and Governor's Ranch Elementary, all selected their principal finalists, and I have the last interview with them, and I think we've got three talented and exciting leaders for those three great schools. Over these past 2 weeks, I've also had meetings with our employee groups. We have monthly meetings, and they all sort of fall toward the end of the month, so great conversations with them. I met with the Principal Advisory Committee, and we talked a lot about the strategic plan and next steps around that. And then last night, Mr. Flores and I had a lengthy meeting with the art, music, and theater teachers, continuing that work that we'd started in December around developing a strategic plan for arts, music, and theater education, and including the idea of an arts-focused academy of some kind in Jeffco. So we used a consensus-based process. All of the recommendations came forward from the group, and we reached consensus around those recommendations. We're pleased to report to you that we'll be bringing you a multi-year strategic plan around arts, music, and theater education in April, and we'll bring some members of that group to talk to you about the process and the contents of those recommendations. But I think they're quite good. There are a number of them that we can begin executing immediately, so that's exciting. Some community connections. All of you were present at the lengthy conversation we had with the Lakewood City Council around the parking issues, and we continue to work with the City of Lakewood and the community to identify a viable path forward and how we address that longstanding community issue. You heard from some of our folks from Jeffco U, so I'm proud of that. We will definitely keep that going and over time build hundreds or thousands of advocates for Jeffco and public education in our community. Had conversations with the Jeffco Schools Foundation, sort of as they move toward the end of their budget year and start thinking about next year, and so we're getting excited about programming and what they're going to be working on. We had some turnover with the JAGC board. Susan Miller has resigned as the president, and they have a new president who's stepped up into that role. But we continue to have really positive relationships with JAGC. You saw their recommendations on gifted and talented education were brought into our district unified improvement plan, and we'll continue that positive relationship going forward and work with that group and continue to collaborate with them. I'm a member of the West Metro Chamber Board, so they had a board meeting. I attended that, and Jeffco is the largest employer in Jefferson County. So we are a member of that business and commerce board, and we support making sure that Jeffco remains a great place for businesses to operate as well. Amanda and I attended a meeting with the Jeffco Christian faith leaders and talked a lot about issues of school safety and how our faith leaders can support our kids and teachers and members of the community who are concerned about violence and safety and processing through issues around that. And it was a very positive meeting. I won't steal Amanda's thunder as she talks about it too. Today I met with the Capital Asset Advisory Committee talking about our updating our facilities master plan, and especially through the light of these all this national school violence, what else could we do in terms of greater security for our schools and the capital improvements that might be necessary, and looking further down the road, what changes could we make around that as well. Some events of note, I attended the All-County Elementary Band and Orchestra concert. President Mitchell was there, and it was a wonderful event featuring the great music programs that we have in Jeffco. I also attended the Elementary Art Show, which at Red Rocks Community College, and had the impossible task of selecting the two best pieces of art, which at the end of it, I had no idea. They were all so good and amazing. So it's at Red Rocks Community College. I encourage folks to go by and check it out. It really is impressive, the artwork that our kids have on display. Met with the Student Health Advisory. This is a student group focused on improving health for all of our kids, and we had a conversation around some data collection they were looking at doing and plans they had around improving student health, so I worked with them some on that. We moved our podcast, Talking Ed, from a podcast format into a Facebook Live format as a way to increase viewership of it or listening. The podcasts that we were doing that were all audio were, I think the content was quite good, but not a lot of people were listening to them. We switched over to this Facebook Live, and we had John McDonald, our Executive Director of Security and Emergency Management, on to talk about our security processes and systems. And we had nearly 7,000 views of that 30-minute Facebook Live video. So we're going to continue with that format, and I think it's just a great way to connect with the community and talk about issues that are important for people in Jeffco. We met with the Rose Community Foundation to talk about their potential support for our online enrollment system. We've talked to you about that some, creating an online choice enrollment system where parents in Jeffco can enter in some search parameters and what kinds of schools they're interested in, what sort of geographic preferences, and it brings up the options that are available. It's really a way to highlight the great programs that we have in Jeffco, make sure people are aware of them, and as they're making choice selections across all of our schools. So the Rose Community Foundation is interested in financially supporting this in some way, so we're going to send a grant application into them, but I'm optimistic that will be supported. We also met with the Public Education and Business Coalition. They're interested in building and improving their partnerships in Jeffco. If you may be aware that PEBC runs the Betcher Teacher Residency Program, which is one of the best teacher preparation programs in the country, especially for alternative pathway prepared educators. And so we're looking at expanding that. We're also looking at expanding their supports and programming into more Jeffco schools. So we're still very early in what that might look like, but we're having those conversations with PEBC. I'm a big fan of their work. And Amanda and I attended, and I won't steal too much of your thunder again, we met with Jeffco House legislators Lang Sias and Brittany Patterson to talk about the superintendent's funding proposal, but also school funding in Jeffco and in the state for next year. And we had a great, honest conversation with two exemplary legislators that represent us here in Jeffco. So just flying through some state and national highlights, we learned from that conversation with our legislators that the discussions on funding or what is the priority in funding are a high interest topic in the legislature right now. There is this divide opening up between transportation as a major priority and education as a major priority. There probably is a deal to be made between these two important priorities for the state, but we're going to have to work to make sure that our community understands the importance of education funding and conveys that to our legislators so that they make sure that that's a priority for them as well. The superintendent's funding proposal has been released. It's currently in the House Education Committee. It may be heard sometime in April, and I think our goal in that is to try and get it heard on the House floor as well. We understand that it may have a low probability of getting much traction in the Senate, but it's a long race to try and change the School Finance Act, and this is one step in that long race. So to the extent that we can get it into the legislative process, get it heard, get some changes to it, and improve it and bring it back, I think that's a reasonable goal for that this year. You also may have heard around efforts to put a possible state ballot issue for education funding on. You'll have a group that'll come and talk about that with us, I think, Monday. Is that right?
Correct.
Correct.
They'll be here Monday to talk about that system, so I won't take anything away from that. But that's something that's also in the conversation around education funding in the state. At the federal level, the conversations around education right now are all around school safety and what else could we do. What's hard right now is anything that was relatively easy to implement or execute has already been done. And so what we're left now are with our solutions that have significant resource, political, constitutional, or philosophical challenges to them. So they all have significant downsides. And each community, I think, is going to have to process through what is the right next step for them, including JEFCO. So on March 20th, we're going to have that conversation in our community, community forum at Lakewood High School from 6 to 8:30 p.m. We'll have some panelists that are our law enforcement officials as well as nonprofit leaders, and John McDonald will be there to speak as well. But we intend for it also to be a community conversation, so we're going to break up, give people a chance to talk, gather information, and get back together and start this conversation around, on top of all the things that JEFCO already has in place to keep our students safe, what else could we be doing, and what's the next right step for us? And so we'll be having that discussion. At the same time, at the national level, there seems to be some seismic changes happening around resistance to or possibilities around greater school safety. So we'll continue to monitor that and see what happens. Next slide, DJ. As a negotiation update, our negotiations team has met twice with JCEA. We have two more sessions planned. The district brought two issues. One was around non-renewal of probationary teachers and moving the contract language to align with state law around that, and staffing flexibility and moving staff within schools. And then JCEA also brought two issues in Article 5 around time management and Article 8 of the contract around class size, workloads, and resources. The group also heard preliminary budget update, the same one that was presented to the board in January. We sort of have to slow play decisions around compensation and staffing until we get more information about what's going to happen with the budget. So we don't really know that until almost until May, really, when the legislature convenes. But as time passes, it starts to sort of take shape. And so we have to enter into negotiations with that understanding that we have to be flexible and understand how those budget decisions are shaping up. Our negotiations with JESPA don't start until late March. However, all of our negotiation teams will be hearing from our Benefits Advisory Committee in a joint meeting on March 12th to talk about changes to our benefit plans, increased cost sharing ideas, and so that'll be part of that conversation as well. Looking ahead, a number of community discussions, budget discussions. We have three of those scheduled in the next 2 weeks to have conversations with our community around our budget priorities. I'll be talking with the Evergreen Chamber of Commerce. There's an interesting event happening in Lakewood next Saturday, March 10th, around thinking about what's the future of Lakewood, looking 10, 20 years in the future, what's education going to be like, what's housing going to be like, what's transportation going to be like. So I'm excited about that. And I'll be talking with the Applewood Business Coalition about some of the things that we're doing in JEFCO schools. We have a number of boards and meeting events coming up. So the Denver area school superintendents are meeting tomorrow all around this Front Range metro area. Really, our main topic is around school safety and how our different communities are reacting to the tragedy in Florida and what we intend to do in response to that. The JEFCO Economic Development Corporation Governor's Board meets also next week. We're going to talk some about the importance of education and workforce development and what steps JEFCO is taking to improve apprenticeships, experiential learning opportunities, some of the things, same things that you heard mentioned in the District Unified Improvement Plan that are also part of our strategic plan now. I'll be talking with the JCEA Board and just updating them on where the district is headed and things that we're working on. A meeting with the Financial Oversight Committee and meeting with the Child Youth Leadership Council, which is a broad group of education and policy, health, youth advocate leaders from across JEFCO. A couple of events. We have a JEFCO Diversity Expo that I'll be speaking at. The focus this year is on gender and sexual identity in schools and supporting all of our kids, regardless of how they identify and view themselves. And I'll also be speaking at the Student Council Leadership Conference. So that's at Golden High School, also on March 10th, the same day as the Lakewood Forward Symposium. I'll be running from one event to the other just to speak at both of those. Several school visits you see: Sierra, Evergreen, Oberon, Schaefer, the Open School, Compass Montessori, Leewood, Warren Tech, and Lucas. I'll be in a number of schools over the next 2 weeks. And then I've got principal interviews in three schools: Fitzmaurice, Davinny, and Westridge. So that's what my calendar looks like for the next couple of weeks. Next slide, please, DJ. So I wanted to close with just a couple of things. One, I have sent you guys an email on our new strategic plan website. I encourage you to jump into that and start digging around. I'm really proud of the work that Mr. McDermott, soon to be Dr. McDermott, and our team has done standing this up. You'll get a presentation on that a little later, but take a look. It's quite good. And then the picture of the two kids, it's not uncommon to see two kids playing with a cardboard box, right? That's a pretty common thing, especially around my house. We have pieces of cardboard box littered all over the place. But these two kiddos are talking about in the future there will be driverless cars and people will be able to work on their way to, or they'll be able to work on their way to work or on their way to school or wherever they're going. So what would an automobile or a self-driving car in the future need for people to be able to work and think as they were being transited? So that's what these guys are talking about and designing. So just a great example of hands-on student experience, student learning. And that, Mr. Chair, concludes my report.
Thank you, Dr. Glass. Board members, I think it's time for our turn. I would like to say to you, I think we're overrunning time a little bit tonight, so let's see if we can keep them brief. But let's begin with Amanda, and we'll just finish up with me. Let's see how we do.
Well, and here's what I'm going to do, because I feel like this is the best way to hold myself accountable, is I'm going to jump into my stopwatch and try and watch my time. My board report today could dive into things like the conversations with faith community members or with those representatives from Jeffco that spent time with us, all of which were really valuable conversations. Lots going on, but I wanted to spend my board report today saying thank you very specifically for a very specific thing that Jeffco does well. About 20 years ago, there was a school shooting event that really shifted how our nation thinks about and understands itself. I was a grad student preparing to be a teacher at the time, but I called my mom because I had a lot of youth group friends that were in attendance at Columbine High School the day of the shooting, and I wanted to know immediately, you know, do we know if everybody's okay? At the time, I was preparing to be a teacher, and it changed the way I view every classroom that I've stepped into. I no longer had to think just about seating arrangements that work for learning. I had to think about safety, lines of sight, possible exit routes. And it changed my understanding and experience as a teacher. It's now nearly 20 years later, and my children, who were not even a twinkle in my eye at the time, they now have a babysitter who's also in a grad program preparing to be a teacher, and she's processing how she's thinking about her life as a teacher differently in light of Florida's shooting. What I want to do, I also spent time in Chicago as a teacher at a high school that utilized metal detectors because it was a community dealing with the presence of violence impacting students in their neighborhoods and on their streets, not directly with school shootings, but with violence in their neighborhoods. So what I want to say is thank you, because we have had in the last 20 years 2 days of critical traumatic events that were tragedies in Jeffco. But we have had tens of thousands of days in which safety was preserved for our students, and we have had millions of student days in which they were both safe and thriving. They were challenged as learners, and I know that that is because we have had strong partnerships with law enforcement, we've had strong policies, and we've had at every level staff, support staff, educators, and leaders who are committed to making sure not just that we're prepared for the worst case scenario, but that we are enacting every day the very best case scenario that allows for students so that we don't have to face days of tragedy. So my thank you is to Jeffco at every level of the community. And my thank you is anticipation for conversations that may be difficult that our students deserve us to have civilly and openly and based on real information about student safety and success. So I believe that one of the most important things we can do for our students in both safety and lifelong success is to be sure we're adequately and equitably funding every day of learning, those tens of thousands of days of success, not just the couple of days of tragedy. So, Jeffco staff, thank you.
Mr. LaSalle, go ahead.
I'd like to echo everything Amanda said. The past 2 weeks have been tough, and I don't even know 1% of it. Thank you for your open and transparent conversations you've been having with many, many stakeholders on social media. I think that's been very helpful. Our safety and security staff, thank you. You are second to none. And all the mental health supports that I am sure have had to happen, only because I taught 26 years in another district and I know they had to happen every new shooting. Thank you for everything you are doing as a staff. Parents, thank you for entrusting your children to us. And I am so grateful that we have such a fantastic partnership with law enforcement and safety and security team. Thank you. On a more fun note, I have gone to 9 schools since our last meeting. Boy, you know, some very, very small schools, some very, very large schools, and which has made me pontificate the word equity and what that definition really is, because I feel like there are several definitions and several uses of the word, and I feel like it's used very loosely in the 18 meetings that I've been to in the past 2 months, and I really want to zero in and focus on a common definition of equity, programming, facilities, et cetera. I got to tell you, our very first decision as a board, guys, as far as CPOs, went and finally visited Sierra, and I want to tell you, that new building has made an amazing impact on those students. We have gone from buckets in classrooms, goop growing on the walls, to the most amazing learning environments I've ever seen as an educator. And I'm just, you asked their principal, Troy Brickley, what is the change in attitude and demeanor of your students and teachers from last year to just this year? And he will talk your ear off. It is a much more positive environment, much more conducive to learning, and it's just a fantastic, I just want to give you that feedback, and I will talk your ear off at another time if you want to hear more. So proud of that decision. I can't wait. I have not gone to Three Creeks to really tour and watch the magic in the classrooms yet, but I'm sure I'll feel the same way there. Let's see, DAC meeting, thank you. I can't thank the DAC committee enough for your hard week. I know you were planning on giving this presentation that you did tonight in a couple of weeks, and you're on a very short timeline, and just great information, great thoughtful, thorough presentation, and thoughtful, thorough conversations that I witnessed at your last meeting. Thank you for all of your hard work. Grid Ed Action Summit, I can't tell you, it was so nice to be in a room probably the most active public education advocates for an entire day. It's so inspiring and motivating going to those meetings, and it was a great day yesterday with great breakout sessions. This morning went to the Jeffco Quarterly's county commissioners meeting, and it was great to get updates from all the municipalities about what is happening and what they're looking forward to in the future. And of course the CASB legislative conference today, which was great. It'll be tomorrow as well. Very excited about Read Across America tomorrow. I get to go to a few schools and play Dr. Seuss. I'm excited about that.
Thank you, Ms. LaSalle. I have two or three things I'd like to at least mention tonight. Today, I had one of those days that you're really pleased to have as a board member, and I say that to you sincerely. Karen Kwanbeck and I had the opportunity to go down to the Colorado Department of Education reception at which they present their John Irwin Schools of Excellence Awards and all of those kinds of things. I want you to know I was proud to be a part of Jeffco today, and that's one of the rewards, I think, of being a board member. We had 43 schools, and I was able to sort of stand there by the podium while they read the name of every school in Jeffco that was receiving an award. It took a good long time, and it was obvious to any casual observer, including me, that there are a lot of good things going on in schools in Jeffco. And so I was truly very proud, and I know I shouldn't do this, but I am going to do a shout out to Pennington Elementary, because Pennington Elementary was one of the schools that received an award from CDE for improvement. And I need to tell you, given the history and where we've been with Pennington and the possibility of closing them, that's pretty exciting. That community, their principal and that staff are doing some great work, and so are all the rest of them. And I should read all 43 schools, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to call out Pennington and call it good. It was fun. I did meet with bus drivers at the Central Terminal. That was actually most enjoyable. I did visit Longview High School and listen to the students tell me why that environment suits them better than our traditional high schools. And all I'm going to say about that is that's one of our option schools. It does seem to meet the needs of some students, and that's a good thing. With the incident that happened in Florida, I would like to think a little bit about what the students down there have been doing. You know, they are trying to make a tragedy have some kind of a positive outcome. That is not uncommon when we experience loss and that sort of thing. But what I want to call to everyone's attention publicly is how well they have done it. They have done it with respect. They have researched the issues. They know what they're after, and they are communicating with people and doing their level best to make a difference. And so I think we have to at least be proud of them for the way they've conducted themselves. The whole safety security thing, as has been said here most eloquently by our superintendent, is a complex issue. And we will end up in the final analysis, I believe, taking multifaceted approaches to keep our children safe. There's no one magic answer that anybody is going to come up with. We're going to have several when we look at that. And then I would like to close by saying that there is a program that we run statewide that I think plays a significant role in keeping our children safe every day. And that is our Safe to Tell program. And I always believe that if we can get our students and parents and our community people to communicate with us about what they are seeing and where they are seeing risks, whether those risks are suicide or, you know, perhaps some kind of a tragic event, we stand a good chance of preventing those. And so the Safe to Tell program, I think, has been highly successful. And it's right now, it's a big hope for me that we have that program in place. Susan.
All right. So I was trying to get out to some middle schools to address some excitement over transitions, and I have the privilege of having middle schools in my district that transitioned, 15, 20 years ago, and some that are transitioning right now. And really one of the great things that I learned in being there, speaking with the leaders in those buildings, was their collaboration with each other and their support for each other and sharing those ideas, which is great to hear. And then I was at my exercise class yesterday, and I love being out in the community, that it reminds me of really the great work that all of us do all the time, and sometimes we forget about it. And it was a parent whose child goes to Red Rocks Elementary, and I said, well, that's one of Ron's schools, and she said, yes, he came and spoke to us. And then a Deer Creek High School parent and a Chatfield parent, so quite the exercise class, but all really excited about the things that are happening and their kids' transitions into these buildings and their questions and my ability to address them because of the great work that we're doing was really meaningful to me as a board member, and that our crossover between our areas and our districts, that we're meeting the needs and we're getting into all of our buildings to see those populations was great. Green Mountain Elementary met with a family liaison officer. Am I saying that right? Title for Title I schools? Maybe that's the wrong title. Phenomenal person. I wish that we could have those in every single school. Anyway, they're doing a shout-out program. They reach out to parents to shout out great things that their kids are doing and invite them to come to the school on Fridays. And she was beaming with the hesitation that she hears on the phone of, oh no, what did they do now, versus I'm sharing this great shout out of this amazing thing that they did. And the feeling of parents than wanting to just talk to this officer about all the other great things that their kid does. So I'm going to try and get there on a Friday morning to hear the shout-outs now that I hear that that's happening, and that was really exciting. So in terms of the other challenges that have been going on in our area, I've been to a number of meetings, and it does come up at every meeting. So I just want to say that John McDonald's a rock star, and we are so lucky to have him as a national expert on these issues. And thank you, Dr. Glass, for that that Facebook thing. I'm a little bit of a dinosaur. It took me a while to find it. I actually listened to it today, a little late, but I'm going to take that and redirect people to listen to that because it answered so many questions that I hear when I'm out in the public, and I am not able to answer them in a way that you guys presented, and it was so meaningful to me that I want to make sure that I'm resharing that with people in terms of a connection. I was then at some other meetings where people are actually changing their meetings to make sure that they can get to your March 20th meeting. So thank you for doing that as well. Thank you for sharing tonight with us the details of that so I can republish that as well so that people have what to expect at that meeting. I think will be very helpful in terms of continuing to address questions that we have in our schools and in our public meetings about that. And I will just say, for me as a parent, challenging, but a way to sometimes bridge that is re-engage in your schools. This is an opportunity to say, I want to know more about my school. I want to be a part of my school, that we have amazing things happening. And sometimes we funnel so much energy, mm-hmm. as you guys have said, into tragedies. Go to your school plays. They're all coming up in our high schools and our middle schools in the next 2 weeks. It's incredible. If you've never been to one, put it on your list. Go to one. Go to a PTA meeting. Go to an accountability meeting. Meet your principals. Be a part of your school community. It will make you feel safer. It will make you feel a part of something
inspired.
And sometimes when we feel helpless of what can we do, go to your school, be a part of that community, and grow that community. That's a great way to support our children and our mental health, and I just make that as a suggestion.
You know, we've all been talking about a number of the school visits. I've done 15 since the last time we were together, and it is inspiring. It's one of the privileges of being in our position is to go to the schools and see the extraordinary work being done by our educators, the work being done by the children in the classroom, and we are able to walk through the schools, walk through classrooms, and I tell you, we walk in and the children are used to adults being through the classroom, and they don't bat an eye, they don't miss a beat, they just continue on task, and I think that's great evidence that these kids and their educators are really on task and task oriented. I've been asking a set of questions in my visits. One is, how are we doing on the transition? And I can tell you that in the elementary schools, they are all well along in making the plans and helping families get adjusted to the changes. Most of them that I talk to are having separate continuation ceremonies for the fifth and the sixth graders, and you know, the anxiety is gone, and they are just moving down the road of making this happen as smoothly as possible for the families, and it is no longer really a source of anxiety. It's what's going to happen, and they're just getting through it. And part of that related to that is the budget discussions, particularly in the elementary schools. Prior to the readjustment of our allocations just before Christmas, there was a fair amount of anxiety about what those adjustments were going to look like. After the adjustments and through the budget discussion so far, they are much more relaxed. I won't say that it is perfect. I won't say that we have the perfect formula, but I can say that they are able to work with it, and the budget process seems to be working pretty well this time around. There are a couple of issues with regard to leadership. I've been asking the principals, you know, whether they were whether they're short-term or long-term people, how was your experience in coming to the district, becoming a leader in your school? How was Jeffco in its training process? And honestly, I got very mixed reviews. But I think that that simply demonstrates to us that that's an opportunity area. And so I look forward to the presentation coming up from the staff about how we are going to be deliberate about developing the leadership of our schools for tomorrow. You know, we are going through 20 to 30 principals each year, and we need to be very deliberate about how we go about attracting, nurturing, and training, and then keeping those very important people. I had the opportunity, three of those schools I visited were three charter schools in my area. And what I was listening for is, what's the quality of our relationship with our charter schools? You know, it was the source of a fair amount of anxiety and consternation over the last 4 years. But honestly, I think the district and those schools are doing very well at working together. And I'll tell you, the evidence was that each of those principals was able to rattle off a number of people in the district, people at the central district office that helped them in all manner of different ways. And they knew the individuals' names here. That told me that they really had accessed the resources that are in this building, and that the people in this building treat those schools just all like all of our other public schools, because those are our children. It doesn't matter the building they're educated in, those are our children. And I tell you, that is the attitude of the people in this building, and I'm so proud to have heard that. So thank you to the people here and the people everywhere else in this building for the good work that you're doing. I really am grateful for that. And they were too. So good work. And that's enough. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Rupert. We will move now to item 0.601, which is correspondence. Just an announcement, public correspondence received by the board is available in a book on the table outside of this auditorium for public review. And now item 6.02, which is public comment part one. I have reviewed the number of people that are signed up to speak this evening. We actually have more in part two of public comment. We only have one speaker in part one. So I'm gonna see what happens. This will be a new experiment, but we're gonna see what happens if we simply combine those. So we'll begin part one and two of public comment. If you signed up to speak to the board on, well, I'm not gonna say that because we're gonna violate that. We're gonna let you speak to the board. The part one speakers will have to speak to what's on the agenda. The other speakers are not limited by that. The board listens with respect and asks those who address the board to do the same. Business items before the board may bring forth emotional responses from our speakers. Please remember to address your remarks to the Board of Education, not the audience or our staff members. As we work respectfully with the community members and staff, so too do we request that speakers' demeanor and remarks reflect the same. As you agreed with guidelines when signing up to speak, do not use defamatory or abusive remarks. Also remember, you are being recorded, and so please do not use names of students and family members that are not your own. With that, I think we'll go ahead and get started. Our first speaker signed up to speak is Russell Haas. Mr. Haas? Okay?
Yep.
Okay.
She's just messing with you.
1920. Chairman Mitchell, members of the board, thank you for the opportunity to speak. Russell Haas from Golden. I have two items. Regarding agenda item 9-1, the question is, why are you proposing to spend $30 million on getting third graders to read at a grade level? In 1991, a previous board asked the voters for 5 years of additional tax revenue to improve student performance with a money-back guarantee. At the end of the 5 years, there was no improvement obligating the return of the money. There followed a strangely worded ballot question as to how the taxpayers wanted their money to be returned, A or B. After 2 weeks of research with some legal help, it was determined that regardless of the vote, the district got to keep the money. So if statewide literacy in 1845 Massachusetts, and that's pre-public schools, was at a higher level than it has ever been since, and this statistic comes from a guide at Sturbridge Village, Massachusetts, why are you proposing to throw a bundle of money in support of an undefined approach? Should you not adopt a tried and true approach using materials which would educate and capture the imagination of students and allot the money elsewhere where it might be better spent? The second item I have is regarding 12.02. At your January meeting, a measure was passed which affected the ability of parents to learn of staff and teacher dereliction. Tonight, we are seeing a further attempt to limit transparency by moving future study sessions to a time during the normal workday, 9:00 Monday morning. Why are you limiting access by working parents and teachers? Who gains by this, and are we not seeing a pattern here? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Haas. I'm going to move now to the people who are actually on part two of public comment, and if they are in the room, we are going to go ahead and do that. We'll start with Terry Wilcox. Is Terry here?
Yes.
Please come to the microphone. I believe this is a group presentation, and so we will allocate 10 minutes to that. I would respectfully ask that you introduce at least four members of the group to meet the requirements of our policy.
We have some material.
We can take that for you here.
Just for the record, I'm Heidi Anderson. I'm a parent and future Pomona parent.
Is that mic working? I'm not sure. Speak loudly into it. Let's make sure.
Thanks. My name is Elizabeth Anderson. I am a future Pomona student.
And I'm Elizabeth's mom. I'm Heidi Anderson.
My name is Stephanie Smith, and I'm a current parent of two Pomona students. One is they're both athletes, and one is in the PAW program at Pomona.
I'm Terry Wilcox-Burke, and we're here tonight to present a problem that we're having. There has been cuts, and if you receive the materials in front of you, it kind of looks like a book. But there's a lot of research in there that we have done as parents. Basically, what we're faced with is a great program known as PAW. Some of you may be familiar with it, the Performing Arts and Humanities Program. It is the only program of its type in Jeffco. And this, for next fall, Pomona has decided to cut three positions, two that directly impact our program. So one would be our facts teacher, who contributes to our PAW program and very much so to our theater program as well. We do a lot of cross-curricular content. They do all of the costuming for our plays, of which we have numerous every year. There would be a cut to one of our assistant theater teachers, and he also runs the Woods program. So that can affects our props for the school play. He teaches kids lighting. He teaches them stage development, all of those types of activities. And then we would also be losing an English teacher in our PAW program, and she actually does cross-curricular content with the social studies teacher. So possibly that position could be absorbed within the department, but it would look different. Right now, our PAW students receive their English and social studies classes through the PAW program, which is very art-specific, so they're learning about the world through art, and we really like and appreciate that program. It's been highly successful. I have provided lots of different awards that we have received in the past year. We're successful in the fact that we've added 60 more students this year. We're concerned that the school is not helping us advertise our program as well as it could be. For example, we have one feeder school that feeds into Pomona High School, and that's Moore Middle. So the day when the counselor goes to talk to the students about the program was actually canceled. So that potentially disrupted some students becoming interested in our program. Otherwise, we rely on choice in Pomona, students' choice in for the excellent sports programs and the PAW program. And quite frankly, we are very supportive of the sports program, and they are very supportive of PAW. It's a mutual respect between the two activities. We're just concerned that the teachers that are being removed are being removed specifically from PAW. So what that means for our teachers is we'll have one theater teacher instead of one theater teacher and two assistants. So all of the hours that he puts in after school, which are numerous and are also located in your booklet here, he will be forced to, we're not even sure because he just doesn't have that amount of time available. So we want to keep our program, and we're concerned that these cuts are going to make it so that it's not an attractive program anymore. We feel like this program fits in very well with the new art school. The new art school is a K-8. Pomona already has a very successful high school for those students to attend. It would also help us with attendance. So that's some of the things that we're concerned about. We also wonder why the decision was made, when it was made, because we are being told that students did not select some of these electives. But students actually had not turned in elective slips yet. So none of the sophomores, juniors, or sophomores and juniors and freshmen at the time had turned in elective course registration. None of our freshmen had selected courses. And so we feel like if cuts are to be made, shouldn't they be made based on student choice and which electives they're not choosing? However, they never had the opportunity to do so. We're also concerned that the process that Pomona is using to select students in first round choice is not a process that's helping our program at all. So for example, if you want to be in an IB program in Jeffco, you can apply for the program, very rigorous, but you apply for the program, and once you get accepted into the program, you automatically have a spot in that school. For the PAW program, it doesn't work that way. So for example, my daughter, what auditioned for her PAW spot, she was accepted. It was a full 3 weeks later until she actually found out that she was accepted to Pomona. In the meantime, as a parent, you're wondering what's going on, and since I have a very talented cellist, I decided to go open enroll at other schools that had great music programs, and she did get into them. I ended up having to accept a spot and then decline a spot because she ended up getting into Pomona. So the process took too long, and it seems like it should be just like any special program in Jeffco, which is once you audition or somehow apply for your spot and get it, you should be able to keep it. So those are some of the points that we have. These are CTE certified teachers. They're deeply loved. They support our social and emotional learning at our schools, and that will be highly impacted. You'll probably find that somewhere in your book. But those classes will not be offered. So I have some students here today who tried to register for those classes. Of course, they're not there because we're not going to have the teachers for them. It'll also affect our teacher preparation program, like the beginnings of it. We have a really cool program that's ran through FACS where students are able to take classes with students and get those kind of education, pre-education ideas flowing. We won't offer those anymore. Those are some of the different classes that we have that will not be offered. We won't have Woods classes. It's just a really sad, sad program, especially if you have two kids. I have a sophomore and an incoming eighth grader. We were counting on this great program, and now we have cuts, and we're wondering why. Other schools of comparable size in Jeffco, Dakota Ridge, Golden, and Stanley Lake are comparable in size, have two facts teachers. We have an arts and humanities program, and we're cutting a facts teacher. It just doesn't seem to add up to us. We also have, we have six administrators at Pomona. Other schools of comparable size have five administrators. So we're really asking today for you to help us figure out how we can keep these highly qualified teachers that have been there, that are loved, experienced, and are performing miracles at our school, and not have those taken away from our students. So.
I just want to add that I went to Jeffco schools until sixth grade. My sister went to Columbine High School and was actually playing on the football team there. And we moved out of Jefferson County, and I've been raising my kids in a neighboring district. However, we've choiced over into Jefferson County. It was just this past summer that we were able to purchase a house right next to Pomona High School specifically for this PAW program. And I really want to highlight the fact that PAW brings kids outside of Jeffco into Jeffco. And so this idea of selling schools for what they offer, and I really think, you know, students are advocating for their education at Pomona High School. We have kids back here. I have a daughter who's really getting interested in civics and the idea that you can advocate for yourself, and specifically for Pomona High School. And so I just want to highlight how much this program brings into Pomona. And to cut from it, I think long-term, really will impact the community and Pomona negatively, not just the PAW program.
I just want to make one quick point. I know that the district is looking at the next generation values in your mission statement. And one thing that the workforce needs is kids who can go out and work after they graduate. 45% of the kids at Pomona, when they graduate, they do not go to college. They go straight into the workforce, and they don't have those skills. And the courses that are being cut, the Woods program and the Stagecraft program, are the courses that these students need to get those skills. And the problem is that counselors aren't pushing them into those programs. They're letting them take five classes or six classes instead of a full course load. And they're leaving Pomona without these skills, without the workforce skills. My second piece is the social-emotional piece. Those courses are all being cut. And as we all know, unfortunately, that's extremely important to keeping our students safe is social-emotional learning. And those are the classes that we're losing. And I just would like to ask this board to think about when you're building an arts program in an arts school, to please think about how you can possibly fund and help us fund an existing arts program in the only high school arts program in the county. Please, thank you very much.
Go ahead.
Just, this plays a major role in our school, in our community. And can I finish the sentence?
Please okay, finish your sentence, yes.
Thank you. We've got the two main people in the theater program, so the heart of our arts and humanities program there at the school, are each spending 20 to 25 hours a week, extracurricular, things they're doing. So if we were to, we're talking about cutting two staff, we're leaving one person in charge of this incredible list of all the responsibilities, and essentially another full-time job is to maintain where we're at now. We'd be looking at 40 to 50 hours in addition to his normal work week just to provide everything that the students have been accustomed to. And you're cutting the project-based learning that's supposedly a district priority. You're losing fashion design, costumes, interior design, film studio, video production, dance, and improv will be at risk. And we haven't looked at really creative
solutions.
Sir,
I'm sorry, but okay. We're going to have to stop.
Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for your service to the students.
You're welcome. Thank you, Pomona. I believe next we'll go to Keith Fischel. Is Keith in the room? If you are, please stand and come to the microphone. Okay. We'll check that later this evening. Do we have Nicole Trick Steinbach? Is Nicole in the room? Please come to the microphone.
Hi, it's much more comfortable to talk to you than have you behind me. So I'm a Jeffco parent. Can you hear me with this? Okay, fantastic.
Much better, thank you.
Yeah, it's weird being a tall woman, right? Thank you again. I really appreciate this. And I appreciate you guys letting me know that this was taking place today. We've seen a flurry of discussion in our media, our parents' meetings, our Jeffco Generations Facebook jam about the school shootings. Thank you for the jam, by the way. It's been amazing. And we've seen a variety of suggestions and comments, as well as some demands. And I spoke earlier this week, and the first thing that I asked for was for you as a school board to reject some of the extreme proposals that had come up in a parents' meeting. And Mr. Mitchell, thank you very much for doing so. I understand at the Colorado PTA meeting that exactly that took place, so that really matters to me, that when we speak up, that those things are listened to. And good news flies in this county. The one thing that I keep hearing is about security and more security, and we're not talking about the weapons. The last time I spoke, I said that's like talking about a rainbow and ignoring the color red. I want to come, and I would like to ask again, and at the school board, which I was told is the right place, I want to ask you to offer us, this generation that was maybe in grad school, I was entering college. I've never done a lockdown drill. Most of the people haven't. What are our children going through? There's a growing body of literature expressing concerns of the mid and long-term psychological impact of these drills on our students. I know that I am poorly prepared to answer questions from my child. The second thing that I would really like to ask, and this really comes from our Jeffco as well as the budget that you guys have made transparent for all of us, is one thing I wasn't aware is that Colorado is so badly funded. We're somewhere in between the 39th and the 40th. We need more teachers, paras, staff, administration. I am telling you guys things you already know. As part of a German family, I have been to 6 or 7 different Jeffco schools. I've never seen an up-to-date globe. The Berlin Wall has been down longer than it was up, and yet I haven't seen a globe that doesn't have 2 Germanys. That, I think we can agree, is very, very low on the priority list, right? But I ask you, please, for extreme prudence in spending more of our educational budget on security. I would like to point your attention to a Congressional Research Services just recently issued a comprehensive study on all of the literature regarding studies on SROs. They have found that there's actually no positive correlation between greater security and reduced school violence. And if that's our goal, we need to make sure that we're leading towards that. And thank you for the time. I really appreciate it. And you guys, your work really matters to a lot of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Colmar, is Eric in the room? Please come up, sir.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for giving me a little time. I have 3 minutes. I wish you would have 10 minutes only. your talk was very long. Well, I would like to start out with, last time I left with the MAT agenda and the curriculum and investigative MAT, but I would like to say something about the life, because that is the most important life. On the shooting and all those things, looks like people are confused. Now, in Israel, they give guns, automatic weapons, to the kids in the high school going in, and any terrorist would start to shoot, he would be dead on arrival. But you cannot do it here. You have to have a responsible kids for it. I'm sorry. But it's really, now, the gun doesn't kill. That's the most ridiculous thing. If it kills, the militia, army should not have a gun, police should not have a gun, because a gun could go off and by itself would shoot all over. But I would like to see that in the classrooms, each classroom would be at least one teacher who goes there, or well, however you divide up. So the teacher is always there. If he could have a concealed weapons, it would be great. That's not a great thing to have a weapon and how to handle it. And I'm sure there are a lot of teachers who were in the army or a military that could do a good job. And it looks like it just doesn't go through. And the other thing I observed, these kids were coming on a fake alarm for fire drill. It used to be a fire drill. It always made me really nervous when I had a fire drill. And when we walked out in a big group on the field, it was ready, exposed to any accident, any shooting. And please don't do it. Get somewhere in the auditorium, a gym, where it is far away, the fire, you know, put them together, not going in the open, exposed really to violence. And I could predict that it would happen. It's kind of if it happened in Florida. So please. Now the inventive mat was, okay, kid, you figure out yourself how to multiply, how to divide, and work on it. I wonder if Einstein would say this to the college kids, go home and figure that out. Well, my time is up, or zero. That's my middle name, don't do it.
Thank you. I want to go back and see if Keith Fischel is here. Is Keith in the room? The last speaker that I show on part two is Mr. Jim Fernald. Are you ready to speak, Mr. Fernald?
Always.
Please come to the mic.
If I can overcome my cough and cold. Some months back, the term productive struggle was mentioned in a presentation. I have seen that term used in a number of articles and educational journals as well. Let me respond with how a traditional teacher such as myself views this. I struggle with the concept of productive struggle. If a student asks me a question, more often than not, I'm probably going to answer it. And I've always seen that as an important part of my job. But apparently many educational experts think that's a bad thing, and I guess I've never been clear on exactly why that is. It does raise some deep philosophical questions about what education should be. It raises some issues about the student task, which I note is on the agenda for Monday. I've always felt the teacher should have content expertise and share that expertise with the students. I get the impression that some of the educational reformists do not agree. They seem to think that students should share their own expertise with classmates and that this student sharing should be the primary way to convey knowledge. This seems to me to be a misplaced priority. Apparently, there has been a recent attack on worksheets. The idea that worksheets, which allow students to practice and refine their skills, are somehow bad and should be used sparingly. I would argue that worksheets, and that term encompasses a lot of different things, should be used often and freely. They are one of the very best ways to convey knowledge to the next generation. Now, let me say, when I was teaching, I always planned activity days, projects, this, that, and the other thing, but that was the exception, not the rule, and I think they should supplement, not supplant, the academic side. Just very quickly on one other issue, I was very proud to sign the Great Education Colorado Ballot Initiative, which I note is also on the agenda for Monday. If that makes the ballot, I think it would make a bond and or mill election perhaps very problematic, and I hope that the board will certainly consider all the ramifications of that if those both come to pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fernald. I will check back later during our meeting to see if by chance Keith Fischel decided to leave and come back when he thought he was going to speak. We'll move now to our consent agenda. Is there a motion on our consent agenda?
I move that the items on the consent agenda be approved as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved that the consent agenda be approved as presented. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Ms. Harmon.
Yes.
Ms. LaSalle.
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell.
Yes.
Mr. Rupert.
Yes.
Ms. Stevens.
Yes.
Okay, consent agenda is approved. We'll move now to our ends discussion agenda. Last month, on February 1st, the board heard a presentation and discussed the high-level strategic direction of Jeffco Public Schools, which included academic and non-academic goals for the organization, referred to as system indicators. The board was briefed on the process of benchmarking to establish these system indicators. Prior to that, on December 1st, the board discussed the strategic direction of the district, outlining the method of reporting and monitoring. This March 1st presentation tonight continues information sharing with the final details of the strategic planning process, which focuses on the tactics to reflect a more specific set of coherent actions to improve educational experiences and outcomes for our students. Aligned with the intent of the strategic plan, the board will receive regular updates of progress on the strategic priorities in the form of a structure to facilitate organizational learning and decision-making. This structure is known as stock take. The first stock take to the board is scheduled for the coming Monday, March 5th, during our study session. Dr. Glass, do you have anything to add before we turn this discussion over to Mr. McDermott?
I do not, thank you.
Okay. Mr. McDermott, thanks for joining us. Please begin.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to continue our conversation on the direction and strategic plan for our schools and community. There we go. So I want to return to the theory of action for the organization. And it articulates a causal relationship between a systemic focus on authentic student learning experiences, conditions for learning, students' readiness for learning, and students' success in their outcomes. Articulating a theory of action really requires us to organize our efforts and our attention and resources in alignment with the theory of action and the organization and community's priorities. As a refresher from our February 1st conversation, I'll quickly reorient us to the strategies and tactics as an organizing structure for the strategic plan, and then we'll discuss some additional details on the newly launched strategic plan website and the stock take structure. Then I'll conclude with a quick refresher of the system indicators that Dr. McGillivray and I discussed with the board on February 1st. So the learning strategy is really at the heart of what we do. The strategy is made up of six tactics that, working together, seek to create authentic student learning experiences through a focus on student task, attending to individual needs and passions, and balancing the transformative power of technology with meaningful relationships and a focus on uniquely human experiences. The conditions for learning strategy focuses on systemic excellence and equity, emphasizing teaching as a profession and best practices of the profession in high-performing systems to ensure all students work against a high-expectation curriculum and have equitable opportunities to be successful. Readiness for learning strategy acknowledges that some students come to school with barriers to learning, and as a system, we must work to mitigate these barriers through supporting the social-emotional needs of students and engaging our communities and families as partners in educating our students, beginning with our youngest Jeffco students. The focus of the strategic plan is on the learning experience of students, but we also know that students, families, our community, they rely on transportation, facilities, technology, financial resources, and communication to arrive at and pursue authentic learning opportunities. So the next few slides provide a high-level overview of the strategy, of the strategic focuses of our technology, operations, finance, legal, and communication strategy to support student learning. Beginning with technology, Our four tactics here seek to build a secure infrastructure to support student and organizational learning. The operations strategy and tactics focus on excellence and efficiency in the use of facilities, transportation, and food services. And not reflected here, but certainly a value and priority for the organization and the community, is a commitment to the safety of our students. We've heard some of that conversation tonight. So members of the board and the community can expect a fourth tactic focused on school and student safety under the operations tactic, under the operations strategy, excuse me, in the future. Finance strategy focuses on transparently and equitably aligning district financial resources in alignment with the district strategy. Our legal strategy supports a culture of professionalism through training and policy alignment, and our communication strategy and tactics meaningfully engage our students, families, and community. So each strategy and tactic, along with the system indicators we'll discuss in a moment, are described in greater detail on the public strategic website that launched this afternoon. This is a screenshot of the homepage here. Each tactic has its own page on the website that includes a theory of action for the tactic and specific, measurable, ambitious, realistic, time-bound, or SMART, as the acronym, goals. Additionally, each tactic identifies a team that's charged with organizing and advancing efforts in alignment with the aspirations of the tactic. I want to underscore that the strategic plan and also the website are part of a continuous improvement process. We expect to learn through implementation, and in doing so, this information is subject to change and adapting as we learn. Our goal in publishing the website and sharing our current thinking with our community is that we'll more effectively be able to facilitate input and opportunities for improvement through engagement with our educators and our community through their input. What's currently reflected on the website is still at a very high level. The organization, the Board of Education, and community will have an opportunity to engage with the specific actions for each tactic through a process called a stock take that will accompany this strategic plan. The first stock take, as you mentioned, Mr. President, to the board and community will focus on the learning tactic number one, which is transforming student task, and that will be on Monday, March 5th. The stock take structure is a way to facilitate the organizational learning and improvement through a regular focus on the strategic priorities we've identified and incorporating input and feedback on our efforts. In addition to the theory of action and SMART goal that's currently articulated on the website, the stock takes will also include milestones, which reflect the major action plan items for the tactic, leading indicators, artifacts to demonstrate implementation, trajectory graphs to demonstrate our progress towards our goals, and implementation heat maps as a qualitative reflection from the leader of each tactic. Following each stock take to the board, the stock take presentations will also be uploaded onto the website. So just to return quickly to the system indicators that Dr. McGillivray and I spoke to the board about last month. Through the efforts of our educators and staff and community in alignment with the strategies and tactics, in addition to the outcomes and improvements we expect to see in the tactic level specific SMART goals, we also expect to see improvement at the system level. The system indicators were identified through benchmarking against our highest performing neighbors and setting goals based off of existence proof that reflect aspirational targets for JEFCO as a system. So the indicators that you see here reflected on the slide represent important and commonly used metrics of success for education systems. These highlight our SAT performance, graduation rates, CMAS, and early literacy. These indicators are less common and reflect JEFCO values. So the purple and green equity growth indicators reflect gap closing metrics for the underserved student population, specifically free and reduced lunch, English language learners, special education, and minority students. The 60th percentile at the 4th through 8th grade level, which is the purple box, and the 55th percentile for secondary would indicate students demonstrate more academic growth than their peers, leading to narrowing of achievement gaps. The CCRI, or College Career Readiness Index, reflects a commitment to increasing opportunities and successful participation in career and college level courses and experiences for students. The non-academic indicators reflect Jeffco's commitment to positive experiences for staff, students, and families as measured by district surveys from each stakeholder group. This slide is just a quick reminder of the benchmarking process that Dr. McGillivray and her team went through in to establish these and looking for existence proof in of our highest performing neighbors to identify our system indicators. And when benchmarking against our neighbors, the resources our neighboring communities invest in their schools is part of that context. So we appreciate every dollar our community provides us through tax dollars, and it's our privilege and responsibility to provide Jeffco students with the best learning experiences possible with the resources we're provided. And benchmarking against our seven neighboring districts, Jeffco does rank fifth in per student funding. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
So I want to begin by saying thank you. I think this is exciting work. I love the aspirational goals, and I appreciate that you've looped in some of those equity goals that are going to make a difference for all students. By having ambitious goals, we know we're not going to accomplish this unless we do accomplish it for more and more students. Student success for some is not going to cut it, so thank you for that. One of the things that I'm curious about is regarding equity, and there's more than just achievement gaps out there. There are opportunity gaps. Because we've got some strong, measurable equity academic indicators, what I'm wondering is how do we have non-academic indicators that will help us know that we're not narrowing the achievement gaps by simply narrowing the curricular and extracurricular experiences of those student subgroups and addressing those opportunity gaps. I remember maybe last year, the most recent time we looked at family partnership survey data, we noticed that there were often higher positive scores among some of our highest FRL population schools, which didn't necessarily reflect, it did in some cases, but it didn't always reflect a closing of the achievement gaps. You know, which of our families can access, for example, instrumental music participation, et cetera. Can you talk to me about which tactic we might see capture evidence that we're growing our students by really making sure all students and student subgroups are experiencing a transformed student task environment and enriching opportunities that are broader than merely academic mastery, but also all those other generations' student goals?
Yeah, I think really good points, and I think you're going to hear it in multiple tactics. So I'll start with the commitment to equity tactic, which Dave Kohler is our tactic lead for that, and I think he's doing a really good job of being very thoughtful about how is he approaching that work. So he's articulated goals that reflect the narrowing of academic achievement gaps, and he's using MAP data as part of that. And he's also, in thinking about the experience of students, he is also using Make Your Voice Heard data to demonstrate the experience of students from demographics that have been traditionally underserved. So he has metrics around the academic and as well as the experience. And then something that I think he's been very intentional and strategic about is he sees a lot of his work as in the commitment to equity tactic lead as working alongside other tactics in how are they incorporating equity into the work of their tactics. So for example, I know I've had conversations with Marna Messer, who's the tactic lead for Customized Pathways, and Catherine Baldwin-Johnson for Embracing the Human Experience. And they've all had conversations with Dave and are specifically thinking about in providing opportunities for students in Customized Pathways, how are we also ensuring that that is reflective of Jeffco's demographics and who are the students who most need those experiences. So it's a huge testament to Dave and his strategic thinking, but he's being thoughtful about his metrics, and he's also thinking about how is he working alongside other tactics.
I feel like it's the mother of all Venn diagrams, but it does help me to see how those specific tactics may be kind of overlapping. And I do recognize that there's room for the human experience tactic or the customized pathways tactic to capture data that helps us know we're enriching curricular and extracurricular opportunities for all kids. So thank you. I'm also having a pretty easy time finding some of those tactics and then some of the measurables that we'll have be able to see on that website that will directly correlate with our board end statements. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also seeing some places where either I may not be guessing correctly or we, for example, at this time don't have any specific operational board ends. And so that becomes a question for, I think, our board to contemplate in partnership with you, is how best to correlate board ends and if there are any conversations that we need to have in order to align thoroughly.
First
question.
Sure, I have a few. Thanks for this work. This is a great document, and I know a few people on the SPAC team, and they have just appreciated your direction and leadership on that team. So thank you so much. This is a massive undertaking. First of all, one of the things I was wondering, and I know I brought it up last time, we do not have a district policy that says we are one-to-one devices yet, do we?
We don't have that policy, but if you adopt this as the district strategic plan tonight, then that's what we're going to start working toward.
And that's what I was wondering. Like, do we need to have conversations about that? Because there are strong articles on both sides of that fence. And that's what I was wondering. So if we adopted this tonight, we are saying we are heading towards one-to-one.
That's what you're doing, yes. So the strategic plan sort of sets the North Star for the district, and there may be all kinds of variations in how the implementation takes place, including the time it takes to implement some of these things. I mean, there are elements of the strategic plan that will, frankly, take us years to implement, or there will be things that we're working on for several years. But by it being included in the strategic plan tonight and you approving it, it's something that the district's going to start working toward.
Can I ask a follow-up question on that? Because one of the elements that we navigate is loose, tight leadership. Some schools have moved quickly to that and embraced one-to-one for all students. Some schools have said, will our policy and or approach kind of have a complementary loose, tight flexibility plus direction? Because those are values propositions in addition to outcomes, expectations, and I'm curious to know how they'll balance, and I'll jump right back to you once I get there.
Yeah, so you'll get a stock take on this tactic around one-to-one devices that'll come up over the next year. So you're going to get a chance to dive deeply into what that means, what our current status is, what our plans might be for implementation. Right now, I would say where we are on it is that the district continues to implement the same sort of path that we have been. We haven't put any additional resources into this. There's been some changes in terms of district IT system support to facilitate it, some thought put around how we leverage the district's economies of scale in terms of purchasing, trying to corral the variety of different devices that are available so that we have some standard devices and operating systems that we're trying to support. But it's still kind of loose in its implementation. So I think the loose-tight dynamic on this tactic would lean much more toward the loose side, and that individual schools have been doing individual school things. But going forward, if we want to make this a system-wide priority, which if you put it in the strategic plan, it is, then we've got to start doing some thinking around how does this move forward in a system-wide implementation.
Okay, and that was my question where it was getting, and I would like to know how you guys feel about that. I'm wondering if we should get one-to-one out of there so that we can have those critical discussions before we adopt this as a policy. Does that make more sense, or?
Well, it's certainly your prerogative tonight to make amendments to the strategic plan. What we've been operating under is the conversations we had over the summer, or the retreat that we had, the presentation you had on this and earlier this year. And so really, at this point, we would have hoped that if there were any major shifts in it, we would have made those by now. It's certainly, again, your prerogative. It's your strategic plan. You're setting the direction for the district going forward. So if you want to take it out, I think that's a conversation for the board to have right now.
Well, and I'm glad you brought this up, because I've had people ask me, and I honestly wasn't sure, because I can say my personal experience is I just thought everyone was going to one-to-one devices till I then got questions, but this school isn't doing it. I'm moving schools. Why do we have it here? Why do we not have it here? So it's a great dialogue. Do we have stock takes on, I know this is a transition year for that for many schools that are already in place in terms of that?
You had no stock takes yet. The stock takes really follow next as you get presentations on elements of the strategic plan. I would say that this is happening in Jeffco, but it's happening unevenly.
Right, and I would say the budget part of that is significant. It's significant in the sense of, yes, it's on the list of supplies, but we all know that there's a lot of students, a lot of schools that are having to buy those, even though they transitioned wholeheartedly wanting to support that. So it's an interesting dialogue as I wasn't sure.
So this is part of where process happens for me. I jump to the website, technology one-to-one devices. There's a SMART goal here. By fall of 2022, so we're setting a timeline, 100% of schools will provide access to one-to-one devices. So my assumption is that this is also a dynamic document, and that as we do stock takes, we're going to see where it's implemented and what effects it's having. So we're not locking this in to say that, you know, we can't adjust if experience and evidence indicates we're either not seeing the results we wanted from it, or there are variables that impact its effectiveness, et cetera. One of the things I'm aware of is our children are going to enter a technology saturated world, and to not prepare them with things like digital citizenship and understanding of how to navigate safety online and the ability to work and collaborate virtually, in addition to it, it makes sense that to deny that to students would not be equitable. But I also want to recognize that when it comes to resources, we want to drive our dollars where learning is most greatly impacted. So I can approve this strategic plan with this tactic in it, recognizing that there's a specific measurable goal that we'll be able to interact with, and all boards could, to say it's important to drive dollars there because we're seeing great results, or we're seeing a diversity of results. Correct?
Tom, can you go back to the stock takes slide? So in terms of the what you're going to be able to interact with, the measurable goal is really one part of that. So the milestones are the specific actions or steps that are being taken to complete that goal. Leading indicators are some early measures that contribute toward that goal of being one-to-one by 2022. They're going to provide you some examples of where it's taking place. You're going to hear about where we've got strong capacity already in place. Like, you already have a number of schools that have done this, really.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a technology infrastructure that can support it. So that's significant capacity. You also have inequities in it. So you have some parents and some communities that have been able to afford it and some have not. So in terms of that heat map, you're going to have some areas that are green and some areas that are red. And then, so that's the kind of conversations you're going to be able to get into with staff over the next year around every single one of these. What you're really committing to tonight is the direction. You will have the chance to get into the implementation, and we'll be bringing information to you and allowing you time to get into that. But what you're sort of setting now is the course.
And I haven't looked at that website. So is it designated as K-12? Goal? One-to-one?
All schools.
Yeah, all schools.
Okay.
But it seems to me like that's something that could, if the evidence is, it's if ever we see that, boy, our third graders in one-to-one schools are less likely to read at grade level, we can make adjustments. I do think controlling for variables will be one of the biggest challenges, because so many moving parts are happening. How do we know what's making the impact?
Mm-hmm. It will look different. I mean, these things will look different. Like, you're not going to give a Chromebook to a kindergartner. But you may, in fact, have a number of devices that the teacher uses in instruction, and then collects or puts back.
Right. I mean, many kindergartners have had iPads for many years. It's not like they haven't been exposed to technology in some of our schools, to your point. Right.
I actually think more of the sort of questions that we receive are related to how we can accomplish this. I'm not sure that I think the debate is about whether or not this is a direction for us. So I see that we can approve the strategic plan if that's, you know, the choice of our board. But in that plan, we always have the option to make modifications and request additional information about progress on them. And so we can always discuss this topic in the future. Is that true?
That's right. So what we're, I mean, over this past year, we've set a vision. We've had vetted it with the community. We've made some modifications and adaptations to it. We presented you early versions of this. We're presenting you what we think is a final version tonight. But now we start a cycle, and that cycle is that you approve the full strategic plan in the spring. Over the next year, you get individual stock take presentations on elements of it, where you get to go deeply into each one of these areas. We'll probably have another retreat in the summer where we sort of mid-course correct and see how things are going. We'll then have another retreat, usually at the CASB conference in December, where we more comprehensively reevaluate the strategic plan and say, do we want to make some more seismic changes to it? And we will. There will be things as we go through these stock take presentations that we weren't clear on, that we didn't provide enough detail on, that our priorities and goals may have shifted. So this is a living document. So then you make sort of updates to the strategic plan in December. We bring you forward a revised version of it in January, and then we begin the cycle again. So that's the process that we need to get into.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very helpful to answer questions when people ask me about that. So thank you.
It is, and I think that this conversation has allowed me to think that, you know, we can approve a strategic plan knowing that, you know, we may encounter bumps in the road along the way and have to modify as we work our way through it.
I can guarantee you that we'll encounter bumps.
It's not to be all end all.
Well, thanks a lot, Dr.
Darn it.
I thought we were finished. I do have another question, and I did bring it up last month, and I was wondering if you'd given it any more thought about embedding facilities equity under conditions for learning or maybe outlining it more as a bullet under operations. I really feel strongly that the conditions for learning have a lot to do with an engaging climate and culture, which is our board ends number one. And we have such huge disparity in our schools regarding facilities condition, facilities equity. And I was just wondering if you guys had given that any more thought and would like to hear more about that, if you had.
Yes, we've thought about it for sure and completely agree that the facility in which students learn has a big impact on the conditions for learning. I think it's most appropriate in the operations strategy, whereas in conditions for learning, that's really kind of education sector best practices where we're talking about professional model of teaching, commitment to equity, high expectations for students, whereas the facilities remains a priority in the second tactic there, safe and secure facilities to support learning, and Tim Reed is the tactic lead for that. So I think it makes the most sense to live in the operations strategy, and working with Mr. Bell as the strategy lead there. So I think it's appropriate where it sits now, and I think we can add some more precision as to what we mean by safe and secure facilities, and you can look at our current thinking now on the website and what we've defined as our goals and theory of action around facilities, and I welcome any.
Is it outlined in there? I haven't.
Yes, I know it launched around 12:30 this afternoon, so it's.
You can read it yet, Alec.
It's very new. But.
Okay, so facilities equity is addressed, and engaging climate and culture is addressed under that umbrella of Tactic 2.
Engaging climate and culture is not part of the operations tactic. The quality of the facility
Yes. Okay.
So I'm reading here, the FCI will be reduced. Overall district facility condition index will be reduced by 50%. FCI incorporates things like deferred maintenance, safe, warm, and dry, and also educational adequacy, which is, I think, maybe where that facility equity is going to be built in. So it helps to call that out, and thank you for that website link, because that does go into some of the specifics, that it lives there and will be reflected in that measurable.
There's a link in your inboxes if you want to sort of...
I saw it hit my... I got a ding on that. I just haven't read it.
I look forward to reading that. I really want to see a commitment in our strategic plan, short-term and long-term, for facilities equity and educational adequacy. So I'm glad it's there, and so thank you for listening last month.
You could thank... Mr. Bell and Mr. Reed, they're really the ones who are the thought leaders on that.
Okay.
So just to continue that piece that, did you want to, I'm sorry,
no,
I'm going to jump
ahead,
over
Susan.
You.
No, if there's more discussion,
there
I'm
is
ready
more,
to ask
There is
for
more
a
discussion because I just, so it's having, Tom, what you just said, which makes sense to me, but then earlier you said under operations we're going to add a tag about safety and security. It's already there. So I'm a little, that's where I got a little lost.
Yeah, I think safety and security is obviously not currently reflected in here. It's something new that we intend to add as a reflection of our priorities and that of the community.
As a whole different, as a different tactic.
Well, I'm sorry, as a different tactic in the operations strategy.
So currently in operations, you have the transportation fleet, the facilities question, and then a food service issue. So what we're proposing is that we add one that's specific to the work that John McDonald and his team does in securing our buildings.
Okay, and so that was my confusion, because tactic two says safe and secure facilities, and as I was absolutely agreeing with what Ms. LaSalle said and about the inequities within our facilities, to me is different than safety and security in our facilities. I'm not focusing just on safety and security in our facilities. I was addressing the greater inequities, at our high school levels in terms of athletic fields, ability to engage and have communities in your school, of lighting, of seating, of that type of inequity and the direct impact on access to conditions for learning. So that's where I got a little lost in terms of the words that were there, your comment about safety and security, which I totally get, versus what tactic two really means.
Yes. So I think,
sorry, Brad.
And I want to echo exactly what she says. To me, the equity issue is a completely separate, certainly they're related, but it's separate from safety and security. Mm-hmm. And I think we will need to measure those things differently as well.
Yeah. I completely agree, and I think in adding a fourth tactic specific to safety and security will likely change the title of tactic two, right, to just focus on the facilities, to support learning, and then add in a tactic that's specific to safety and security.
Well, that one's in there. It's the equity that isn't in there.
Correct.
Yeah.
You could leave two as it is and then make a fourth.
And add number three, yeah.
The language on the website reads more clearly to me for that second tactic than it does in that bullet on our presentation in the summary.
Yeah.
And it clarifies for me that when you're referring to adding a tactic around safety and security, you're referring specifically to the work that John McDonald and his team deliver.
I think in spirit, we're on the same page. We get it. We get it.
Okay. Yeah.
So, our board, are we ready for a motion regarding?
I have one more silly thing, which I cannot get beyond. The CCRI. Can we put a little asterisk of explaining what that word means? And I know that's silly, but I'm hoping that this summary is what people are also looking at. That resonates with people beyond just maybe an educational community. Many parents may not know what that acronym means. I actually had to think about it for a minute rather than just reading it and immediately making that connection. I know that's silly, but I think that these are powerful slides, and some people may not get into the details and maybe looking at that piece and your non-economic, whatever that word was, those non-indicators. Yet, I know that's silly, but I just think that sometimes that's helpful to people.
Got it.
Good idea. All right, are we ready to approve a strategic plan that is a living document?
I would love to put a motion on the table.
All right.
I move that the Board of Education approves the district's strategic plan, including the system indicators, strategies, and tactics as discussed. to represent that fourth? Okay.
As discussed, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded to approve the district's strategic plan, including the system indicators, strategies, and tactics, as discussed. Is there a need for further discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Ms. Harmon?
Here and yes.
Ms. LaSalle?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Mr. Rupert?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
Okay, that motion is approved. I've looked at the work we have yet to do this evening. I think we probably have an hour and 15 minutes work. So I want to say thank you, Mr. McDermott, for your presentation, for guiding us through a very complicated process. And I say that sincerely, thank you. And at this time, we'll take a 10-minute recess and then finish up the rest of our work for the evening.